6 days after losing power in Cook Strait and drifting close to rocks on Wellington's south coast, the inter-islander ferry Kaitaki has just returned to service, but carrying freight only for the next 2 weeks. The cause of Saturday's power cut was a fault in the ship's engine cooling system caused by a leaky connection. 864 people were on board. Inter-Islander Executive General Manager Walter Rushbrook says only after further performance and assurance checks will Kaitaki resume taking passengers. Kia ora and thanks for your time, Mr. Rushbrook.
Good morning.
Could you explain more about the status of the ferry right now?
Yeah, so right now the ship is actually loading, ready to go. There's a bit of congestion in Wellington Harbour at the moment, so it will get away a little bit later than expected, but it'll be underway shortly. So the ship will travel across Cook Strait, so as part of its return to service, it'll do some further sea trials out in Cook Strait, which we can't do in the harbour. And as an extra precaution, it will travel through the northern entrance of the Marlborough Sounds.
How confident are you that the performance and assurance checks will allow Kaitaki to resume taking passengers?
Yeah, so we've got to establish maintenance and inspection processes. We're obviously doubling down on those at the moment. I think as part of the additional assurance processes, we've got independent checks by both Lloyd's Register and MNZ, and we're working closely with them. So they're being very helpful in that review process. And then as part of our precautionary approach to starting services, that's why we're running freight-only services. Our ships run 24/7 a day, so we'll put them through a number of cycles just to make sure everything's fine. And then next week we'll do another assurance review and then look to reopen it for passengers after that.
So you're confident at this stage, and the trials will confirm that, you hope, that you have fixed the problem?
Yes, that's correct. And we'll just go through, you know, proper tests in service before we put it into full service.
Could you talk us through the events of last Saturday? Did the ship lose power to all four engines?
Yeah, so as per your introduction, there's a cooling system which is common for all four main engines and also the generator engines that operate the ship. When there was a leak in a coupling, it lost power or lost pressure for the cooling system, and then all the automatic sensors on the engines detected that, and to prevent them from overheating, they automatically shut down. So it's just a nature of the design of the ship. So there's measures in place to respond to that, and the ship obviously restored power as quickly as possible after that. And while the ship's been off the run, we've been going through all those critical systems just to make sure that it's safe to resume service again.
So the design of the ship is that one failure of one particular piece of the system can take out all four engines.
Yeah, so it's just a common ship design. We're not the only ship that has this particular design feature. And certainly, you know, we're looking forward to our new ships in the future, and they certainly have higher levels of redundancy than Kaitaki does.
And the generators failed as well, including the backup generator, I understand.
I'm not sure about the backup generator. I'm pretty sure that was running, but I can double check on that.
The cause, you've just explained the cause of the fault in the ship's cooling system, the leaky connection. Had there been prior warning signs of that specific matter?
No, not in this case. So there's an inspection and maintenance regime, and part of the investigation will be taking that particular part and looking at the sort of lineage of that and what caused it to fail. So it's too early to definitively say what the issue was, but that's the primary focus of our investigation at the moment.
However, had Kaitaki experienced a number of issues in the week prior, to the point that senior crew and the operations team were concerned and were planning to take the ship from service to address, quote, the most important of these issues, unquote?
Yeah, the other issues were unrelated to this particular issue. So maintenance and inspections are ongoing on the ships all the time, and we do take them out of service quite regularly to undertake works. And so the ship has a weekly layover, and you might recall last year it went to Sydney Dry Dock to have a series of or it had its 25-year special survey. So quite a bit of work was undertaken then too.
So Kaitaki had been using the northern entrance in Queen Charlotte Sound several times before last weekend's outage. Was that related to these other issues it was having?
I'd have to find out the specifics, but we often use the northern entrance not only if there's as a potential risk mitigation process, but our masters and crew need to take the northern entrance on a regular basis to ensure route familiarity. So I'd have to double check on the exact circumstances you're referring to.
I understand that there may be a connection. This was from communications to staff. Could you confirm that there've been about 6 power outages over the last month or so?
I'd have to go and look at the exact details, but there has been sort of what you call brownouts on sort of non-critical systems, which then are quickly rectified by backup systems. So it's a minor system, not related to the main propulsion.
Breakers failing.
Power of the ship.
Breakers failing. Correct, repeatedly. Yes. Okay. And why wasn't a recurring problem then properly fixed?
We had external experts, so we've got some suppliers who supply the equipment. They've been actually working on the ship, monitoring the performance of the ship and then looking at the various failure modes, but also there's a redundant system for that particular issue, so it was not inappropriate that it remained in service.
Does an impact on scheduling at a very busy time when the schedule's already under pressure, and or does the proximity of the ferry to retirement have any role to play in not undergoing more substantial maintenance, particularly around those breakers?
No, as I said, we've got an ongoing maintenance and inspection regime. The ships are getting older, and that's why we're replacing them. But we are maintaining them to the highest standards possible through till the end of their lives. So we've still got a few more years to go, and we invest heavily in that. So, the work will be ongoing.
Back last Saturday, when the ship lost power near Wellington's south coast, how close did things get to an abandoned ship call?
Yeah, so our crew are trained for these types of eventualities and potentially even worse. So all their training kicked into play. So the loss of power happened out in deep water. So the ship needed to drift into shallower water before the anchors could take hold. So once the anchors touched down, we were able to get both anchors down and the ship could be held in position until power was restored and it could come back to port under its own power. So we're about 1.6 kilometres off the south coast, is my understanding.
Okay, so the ship had drifted around 1 nautical mile, and thank goodness, I can't think of anyone who wouldn't say, thank goodness those anchors took hold. But whilst in that delicate procedure, was it just minutes from an abandoned ship call?
Look, there was no abandoned ship call made, and as I said, the crew are all trained for this. We took a precautionary approach by making sure everyone donned life jackets, preparing for the worst, hoping for the best, and there was maybe other lines of defences that may have kicked in before we even got to the point of abandoning ship. So,
which would have been the tugs assisting, and we'll come to that. But were things at a very critical juncture when those anchors took hold?
They were definitely one of our key lines of defence. As I said, there'll be an investigation, but at the time of the incident, we were reasonably confident that would be a good address the situation and stop it drifting any further.
If you had had to abandon ship, how would that have happened? The Arateri was proximate. But how on earth would this have happened? Would the lifeboats have had to have been engaged?
Well, there's lifeboats on the ship, and they were ready just in case. The people were standing by. So an event like this is actually managed by the Rescue Coordination Centre. So they were coordinating all the other agencies. So it was a multi-agency response. And as I said, we train for these things. In fact, we did a joint agency drill last year on a similar situation. So it's the type of thing we prepare for all the time.
Which is good to know, but we would still have been in a situation where drifting dangerously towards rocks at that part of the entrance, 1.6 kilometres from shore, from those rocks, there was the potential for an operation that would have involved what? The use of lifeboats to vacate that ship?
Potentially, yeah. Okay. But there's no doubting it was a serious situation, but the anchors held and we're able to stabilise and remedy the situation after that.
In terms of learning going forward, and I appreciate there are the new vessels coming and we'll have conversations about their operations in the future, I'm sure I'd appreciate that. But just in terms of learning from this, had those anchors not held, the next option would have been to endeavour to use the tugs. And we have seen from the harbour master, and believe me, from many other places, a doubt that those tugs would have been able to assist in the manoeuvre. And in fact, in some recent reporting, we're learning of a maritime lawyer having advised the accident investigation body that there was no open sea tug. This is prior to this event, and that was a serious gap in the armour for a situation like this. Can you comment?
Yeah, so I'm not part of the investigation will go into whether the tugs could have assisted or not. I've heard some people report to me that the tugs would have been able to at least hold the ship in position, not necessarily tie it back to port, but that would have maybe bought more time should that have been required. But that's all speculation, and I think the investigation will go into that. And I certainly think part of the investigation and recommendations will be looking at that broader emergency response, both for the incident that happened on Sunday and other possibilities that could occur. So we'll take part in that in the fullest way.
Is this timely, not just because of the gratitude we can have for those anchors taking hold in this instance, but also because of the larger vessels that you are buying? Is it the case that there's no open water salvage tug capable of towing a large stricken ship in Cook Strait? We have the tourist cruise vessels to consider, of course, as well. And are we absent a vessel of that capacity?
Yeah, I think that's something that the local maritime sector should look into. And you're right, there are bigger vessels that come in and out of Port Marlborough and Wellington. So there may be merit in looking into it. And we'll take part in those discussions.
When do you expect the new ferries will come into service? Just remind us, please.
So the first new ship is due to be delivered in 2025.
Okay. And as we've discussed, these ferries are much bigger than the current ones. We've had concerns raised by the Marlborough and Wellington harbour masters about manoeuvrability in both harbours, not to mention this question of a lack of tugs that could rescue such large vessels. Is this event timely again in ensuring the whole question is properly addressed and in the very near future?
This is relating to the tugs.
Yes, correct.
I think it should be looked at. But just if I can talk about the new ships for a moment, the new ships have a different type of propulsion system, and they use Azipod engines, and there's more redundancy in the ships. So while they might be about 40 metres longer than the current vessels, they actually have enhanced characteristics so that they'll perform better.
Yeah, the manoeuvrability issues, the ongoing discussions with the harbour masters, something we'll return to another time. But again, I don't want to raise a famous name. We don't presume there is an unsinkable ship, and we don't presume there is any ship, surely, that may not need the assistance in an extreme event. And I guess what this has raised is the question of whether we have the rescue capacity, the support capacity that is required for the current vessels, let alone the new ones.
Yeah, agreed. And I think we'll look into that with MNZ and other authorities about the response capability in that area.
When do you expect the full investigation into exactly what happened will be completed, please, Mr. Rushbrook?
Yeah, so there's a number of investigations underway. So we've got our internal investigation that's underway and briefed up. I imagine that'll be a number of weeks at the earliest, and we'll just let that run its course. And then MNZ and TAIC are also undertaking investigations, and they might be able to tell you their timeframes, but we've certainly been cooperating and providing information to assist them.
And you will update within the fortnight, obviously, over whether you believe the Kaitaki is able to take passengers again. You're going through, you're telling me, a thorough process, but as of today, your belief is that should be possible.
That's correct. And we'll just keep people updated. And if anything else changes, we'll let people know.
I thank you. That is Walter Rushbrook. He is the Inter-Islander Executive General Manager.